Okay, then I think that, of course, you know that we have a first-degree murder charge here, and if we vote the accused guilty, we've got to send him to the chair. That's mandatory.
I think we know that.
Let's vote. Let's see who's where.
Yeah, we might as well.
Okay, anyone does want to vote?
Guy with me.
Okay, then just remember that this has to be 12-0 either way. That's the law. Okay, are we ready? Now, all those voting guilty, please raise your hands. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, 10, 11. Okay, that's 11 guilty. All those voting not guilty? One, right. 11 guilty, one not guilty. Well, now we know where we are.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to the Wretched Movie Podcast, the podcast where everything is connected. I'm your host, Jacob Thompson, and joining me is my co-host, friend, and the person most likely to try to get out of the jury deliberation early to go to a baseball game, Alex Perkins. Perk, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well, thank you. I would say yes, but I have been called to jury duty before, and I enjoyed it being as a good excuse not to go to work. So I think I'd side more with that guy.
Gotcha. I've never been called to jury duty. Maybe because I move around too much, but I've never had that annoyance.
I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I can get called again because I didn't see a trial, but I don't know. It's been a while.
Gotcha. Welcome back to the podcast, everyone. This is the show where every week Perk and I review a movie connected to the last one we watched. If you like our show, we post pretty much every Friday on podcast services and YouTube. Give us a follow on TikTok as well. I sometimes post some clips from the show on there. But the last movie we watched was All the President's Men. Now we're doing some other men, 12 Angry Men, to be precise, following Jack Warden. He played one of the like bosses of like middle managers of the reporters in the last movie. And in this one, he's the baseball guy I just hinted at, much younger in this film. but yeah, Perk, why don't you introduce 12 Angry Men?
Yeah, all right. So 12 Angry Men is a 1957 joint directed by Sidney Lumet, his third appearance on the pod, starring Henry Fonda and Lee J. Cobb, among 10 other men. and it follows the courtroom deliberation about an accused young man who is accused of murdering his father. And it starts with the majority in the guilty party and unwinds to the point where they acquit. Some fun facts about this one. Sidney Lumet had the actors stay in the same room together for several hours and do their lines over and over without even filming, just so they could get like a real feel for the what it would feel to be cooped up.
Yeah.
It was a minuscule budget to the point where Henry Fonda had his salary deferred, and then the movie lost money, so he never got paid for it.
Wow, that is shocking, actually.
Yeah, because of the budgetary reasons, when shots were set up and cameras positioned and lighting positioned, they had to do every shot that was going to be from that angle at that moment. So oftentimes there were like two sides of a conversation that were recorded weeks apart. Like one conversation in one scene could have been filmed over like weeks difference.
Wow. I mean, you can't really tell.
No, not at all. And
that's insane.
One of the coolest little touches, which I didn't pick up on, but thinking back, you can kind of see it at the start of the movie. A lot of the camera angles are from above looking down. And then over the course of the film, the cameras kind of level out. And then towards the end, they come below eye level and start to look up to kind of ramp up the claustrophobia of the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't catch that either. But when I saw that fact, I was like, oh, yeah, totally. Like, the final monologue is looking up at juror number three. So, so Perk, you've seen this movie before. I have not.
Yes. So I saw this movie a long time ago. We watched it for English class. I believe we also read the play, and we did a reading of the play in class.
Was it originally a play?
I believe so.
Okay, I mean, that would make sense.
I think it was a dramatic reading for radio or something like that.
Oh,
and then it was adapted into a play and a movie. I don't know which came first, but
gotcha. It definitely makes sense with just kind of the structure of it, but
yeah, it feels kind of like a play for sure.
Yeah. So going to this movie, I mean, I know it's one of the greatest films of all time. I mean, as on IMDb, it's the number 5, you know, top rated movie of all time. So, you know, a lot of hype going in, and I was like, but how good can it be? You know, am I going to like, it's old movie's old. Am I actually going to, you know, like it or not? I'll tell you what, Perk, it lived up to the hype. This is an incredible, incredible film. Like, I'm sure it's a lot of, you know, film bros on their list. But like, honestly, this movie is just very, very well made. Like, it feels so intentional. Like, every decision seems intentional. And something that should be boring is incredibly riveting, like, the entire time. And, you know, I think it does feel a little bit too much like a play at points. Like, when someone's turn to talk, they kind of stand up and walk around. It's like, you kind of need that to break it up a little bit, but besides that, like, I think this is just an incredible, incredible film. Such a great portrait of these different types of people and how they have to come together. And like, this movie still is relevant today. And that's something I feel like we keep seeing on this podcast. It's like some old movies just really hold up and also are just incredibly relevant still, which is kind of sad in some ways. But man, I loved it. I was blown away by this movie.
Yeah, so I hadn't seen this in a long time, but I remembered the story and the way everything goes. But yeah, it's like technically when it comes down to the story and the way the movie's laid out, I think it's a masterpiece. There are like a few things that I could like pick at, but none of them get in the way. It's so well paced. It's so well laid out. The story is really intriguing. You're gripped all the way through. It's a nice short runtime. The way that the events unfold are just like in such a great sequential manner to kind of help you unravel this with the jurors.
Yeah.
It has all the hype for a reason. I think it's a masterclass in a lot of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I was worried this was going to be kind of like a, I don't know, not like artsy, like maybe like pretentious, like film bro kind of movie, but it's like, no, this is like just a really just solid film that tells a really compelling story. And to me, like, it's just all about the group dynamics, like them discovering evidence that, you know, might acquit the person. It doesn't really matter to me. To me, it's about what does it take to like convert these people? What does like, what are your personal morals and beliefs? And like, do you have to explain yourself or not? Like, what is the point of being a good person if you don't directly get benefit from doing that good deed? Like, all these questions that kind of are brought up here and there, I think are just like super interesting to kind of pick at. And then, but also dealing with like prejudice. And like, we have that one juror who's like, just starts going on his tirade at the end. Everyone's just like, we're not listening to you. Like, you have your opinion. We're not going to listen. And I found that really powerful. And like how people get stuck in their beliefs and just don't want to back down. Like, obviously, like juror number 3 with his final kind of tirade. And like, to me, that's very just still relevant. That was very like MAGA supporter coded of just like, I don't care about the evidence. I just want to believe, and just don't leave me alone. I'm not going to switch sides, you know?
Well, there's more to it than that.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I think that there's a lot of things where you can really pull forward to today that group dynamics wise still totally work.
Yeah, I will say on the topic of it being applicable, I was giggling because it kind of feels like this is just in a fantasy world. Like, this kind of thing just wouldn't happen anymore. Yeah. The way that like all these people who've just been sitting in a courtroom for a week and then they get sent in here to do this. And you're telling me at that point you've got a guy who's willing to be the defense lawyer. Like, I don't think the defense lawyer did a good enough job. So I did his job for him and I went out and investigated. It's just like, it's just like,
yeah,
immaculate beyond reproach. Good. And I don't think a lot of people like that exist, but on the other side too, like the society we're in now, people don't change their opinions. And if presented with conflicting evidence, they will call it fake or, basically just if you're getting, when people get into arguments nowadays, it's not like a healthy discussion and it's not helping pick things apart and come to a conclusion. It's you have given me a conflicting point of view. I am going to lock down even harder and retreat even further into myself. And yeah. And you've lost any shot. So,
yeah. Well, and so to that point, just to be clear, I'm not saying I like it because it's realistic. I like it because it's kind of a template of how things could be, right?
Oh, sure.
You know, it's like, I think stories are powerful in that way of showing us a world that, you know, a better world possibly, or taking things that we do know and putting them in a new setting or and changing a way that is interesting and can teach us something. I think this movie is a good, could be a good, like, teaching tool is kind of maybe too strong, but you know what I mean? It's
no, you're yeah. not wrong. It's literally used as a teaching tool.
you watched it in class.
Of,
yeah.
Another one of the fun facts is, like business schools use this movie as like a teaching tactic to explain group dynamics. So
yeah, like I think if
you're not off base at all,
I'm not saying this movie would cure society, but like, I think if young people watch this, we might get less people today that are like, that get stuck in their ways. And like, I'm not
100%, you know? 100%.
So yep. That's why I like this movie. It's like, it takes characters, they're caricatures, but like they're people that you may know or whatever. And it puts them in this environment. It's like, hey, it is possible to come to an agreement or, you know, to change people's minds and all these things. And like, I mean, I brought the guy with the baseball guy, like he switches. He doesn't really care. Like, he doesn't really say why. He just wants it to be done. And the juror number 11 tries to call him out for it. And he's like, no, like I can choose what I want to choose. I don't have to explain myself. And like, that's valid. Like in this context, you don't have to like be a good person. He's just like, or whatever you want to call it. Like, he's just like, you know what? I'm just going to switch because it's going that way. And I'd rather kind of be done. And that's like a completely valid stance in this. And I think stuff like that being included is like, makes the movie much, much better. Cause it just adds to the richness. Not everyone's Henry Fonda in this, you know?
Right. Yeah. Not everyone is I like that. Cause you've got just a very broad array of different types of people. I think, the characters are very one note, a lot of them.
Yeah.
But like with the runtime you're dealing with and the fact that you need to convince 11, they have to kind of be one note. Like you have to kind of piece by piece attack each of these people's character to the point where it flips them in certain ways. Like you've got the one guy who's just, he ends up getting flipped because he takes offense to juror 3 yelling at the old man. Like that's what does it for him. Or baseball guy who doesn't explain it. Or the guy from the slums who's like, well, now hold on. Are you just after this kid because of where he's from? You know, I know stuff about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a problem that the characters are one note. I think it lays a track really well. It sets the path that we go down really effectively.
Yeah, for sure. You kind of, you know, made fun a little bit of like Henry Fonda being the defense lawyer. I will say I agree with you to some extent, but also the knife reveal was hype as fuck.
He
pulls out the knife and throws it down. It's like, oh shit. Like that.
I've never
that
seen
awesome.
A knife like this. Oh, it took me a short walk to find one.
10 minutes to find one of these knives. Yeah. Yeah. And talking about the structure of this movie, like I love how we don't see the case. Like that is so important because we can't draw our own conclusions. We have to just listen to what their conclusions are and like figure out their arguments. Like we don't get an opinion. And then there's like no time jumps. Like this is like an hour and a half straight. Like there's no cuts to like, oh, it's been 2 hours of arguing. It's like, no, we see the entire deliberation.
It's real time. Yep.
Which is just incredible. Like, I feel like I was kept waiting for that to happen and it didn't. And it was just like, it was awesome. I love, love, love how this movie is structured. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen every movie back however far, but it's such like a good example of a contained thriller that you see so often, like in current movies, like where it's a small location, a handful at most of characters, and it's shot in real time or close to. Clearly, it like this is a movie that structurally set the example for so many in the future. And like, I love contained thrillers.
Yeah.
I think it's such an impressive thing because it's so hard to pull off to keep your entertainment or to keep you entertained for whatever it is, 90 minutes, just watching like one room or like just watching Aaron Taylor Johnson behind a half wall or just watching Tom Hardy, talking on his Bluetooth phone in his car. Like, it's so impressive to me, and it's you have to have flawless writing and you have to have a perfect story. And this is a great example of that.
Yeah, the writing is just off the wall incredible. But they also break it up with, like, you have little moments of, like, they take, like, five, and you might have two characters kind of a little conversation, like Henry Fonda and juror number one talking about the football game, or it starts raining at one point, that breaks things up, they got to close the windows or turn the fan on, like, go to the bathroom. You know, I really like how they, like, we have an intense session, then we breathe a little bit, and then intense session, we breathe a little bit. Like,
yeah, kind of roots you back into, like, to the ground.
But, man, yeah, I'm just shocked how much I ended up like this movie. Like, I shouldn't be shocked because it's one of the greatest of all time, but, like, this is a good fucking movie, man.
Yeah, it is. I think the way that evidence is kind of added is it's done in, like, a really good timing. Mm-hmm. I have, like, one nitpick is just some of the evidence reveals are like, wow, that was really convenient that you remembered that now. Like, the fact that the old man noticed that the man who was the witness, like, oh, I saw his coat was torn. I'm like, oh, wow, that is an incredibly attentive detail to remember.
I will say, I like the through line of him being attentive, because then he also noticed the glasses thing. Yeah, like, I like the idea of he's, like, just really looking at people a lot, you know?
Yeah, but... yeah, it's just, it feels a little odd that it's like, oh, I've just remembered she had glasses dimples. And it's in story, it's because he sees the like logical juror take off his glasses and rub his nose. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, okay. But the whole story falls apart if right away you just say, well, does the woman wear glasses? Because then she wouldn't have seen anything. She was laying down. And
yeah.
They take a long time to get to that, and it feels a little bit shoehorned, but
yeah,
it's really effective. It's like the perfect way to kind of turn over that, like, super logical juror number four. So
yeah,
it works. It's just like, it was mighty convenient that, like, you just remembered that absolute perfect, like, point of proof just now.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I will say I do appreciate, though, that it is backed up by the fact that, like, the kid had a shitty lawyer. Like, they set that up, like, hey, court appointed. He didn't really do anything. Like, theoretically, this is stuff that they should have brought up. Like, they would have done their research and brought these things up, but they didn't because of systemic issues, right? And I appreciate them bringing up systemic issues in this movie, like, at all. Like, I was shocked. Like, you're bringing up, like, you know, prejudice from the slums and all these, like, yeah, I was very surprised with that and really happy it was in here. So, yeah, I think it's a bit convenient, and those are the times when it feels like a play or like a radio show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it works into the end of the day.
And the only other, like, gripe I had was the scene where the racist juror goes on his tirade and everyone kind of one by one stands up and goes and stands and looks in the corner. Just felt super goofy. Like, I understand that it's hard to, like, show something like that without doing it that way. But everyone going to, like, stand in a tableau felt like very out of
that felt play. Very play-esque.
Yes. And that scene was, like, it's powerful and I get it. And it letting him talk himself into his own corner is a good way to get him on the side of not guilty. Just like the... I don't know. It was a weird way to do that, where, like, everyone goes and takes their position. It's like, okay. But the point gets across, even if it is a little odd.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to bring up at some point Fences, which I think we saw together, if I remember right.
We might have, yeah.
Yeah, the Denzel movie. And, like, to me, that movie was too much like the play. It felt way, and now it's a lot of just characters sitting and talking. And to me, it was not as engaging. It was not as dynamic. And I just ended up really not liking it. You know, this movie, like, the only knock I have is, it feels too much like a play at times, but the writing is still rock solid. There's still people, like, moving around. There's still really interesting camera shots. Like, it keeps you engaged. Whereas I think Fences kind of faltered of, like, it's literally just Denzel, someone else on a porch talking, two different angles for, like, 7 minutes. And it's like, oh, Jesus Christ, can we do something else, please?
Yeah, the pacing in this movie never dips, which is a huge testament.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, is there anything else you want to touch on? I mean, acting is incredible.
Just to like circle around, because I thought the most effective character in the movie is juror number three.
Yeah.
You could make an argument for Henry Fonda's juror eight, but he really is just kind of like unimpeachably good.
Right.
So there's not too much depth to him other than just, you know, he cares. But yeah, juror number three has the depth, and he's one of the only ones that's given like some backstory.
Yeah.
When he sits down and explains that he has a son who, you know, he beat when he was younger, and that son no longer talks to him. You, throughout the movie, were shown parallels, like through the case that's going on. You've got a father who beats a son, and then the son turns, allegedly, on the father and kills him. And like the deep seated like need for this kid to be guilty is because he sees this as like a trial between him and his son.
Yeah.
Like if this kid is guilty, then it's his son's fault that they no longer have a relationship. Whereas, you know, if the kid's not guilty, then the blame is all his rather than his son's. So I like that. He finds his way like by backing himself into corners. He finds his way to like realizing that, no, it is my fault. It's my own fault. It's not my son's. This kid's not guilty. And there are also some really clever moments where he accidentally like finds what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Like, well, the man said 15 seconds. It's well, how can you trust anything he says? And they're like,
yep. It's like, bro, you don't lie on yourself. Like,
yeah.
There's like three of those moments that are so satisfying. But yeah, no, like the way that's set up, they set up his backstory and they don't mention it again. And like, you can see the parallels, and then he is, you know, the picture comes down at the end, but like, they don't beat you over the head with it. And I think it was very, very well done. Very just like, I don't know, tactful. I think a lot of lesser movies would beat you over the head with that, if him bringing up his son a lot or whatever. But like, no, they set it up. You see the parallels if you want to, and then they pay it off. Like, perfect execution. And yeah, it added so much more depth to him, and it just, the way ending the movie on that just really wrapped everything up super well. And it was really great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of great, we're going to follow that actor to our next movie. We'll talk about that later. Kirk, any recommendations? I figured Locke would come up.
Locke has come up.
Yeah.
I have, if you're looking for like this genre, like the contained thriller, just one room or just like one character on a journey alone, something like that. Locke is great. It's an A24 joint, so like I have to love it as a brand shill.
You're a Barbella.
Yep. I mentioned The Wall, which is Aaron Taylor Johnson. He's pinned by a sniper and just talking on a walkie-talkie to the sniper. And then I haven't seen, but I know a lot of people like Buried with Ryan Reynolds, where he's in a coffin on a phone the whole time. Mm-hmm. And then I've been meaning to, but haven't seen Mass. Which is a movie where the parents of a dead child and the parents of his murderer, school shooter, sit down in a room and talk for 90 minutes.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. Can you see why I haven't gotten around to it? Yeah. Even though like, I know it's going to be amazing. So yeah, I just check, like, this is a great movie. If you like contained thrillers, watch more contained thrillers.
Yeah. I had a hard time thinking of similar movies. I know I've seen some like it, I just couldn't remember. Like I said, Fences, if you want like another movie that's like a play, but in my opinion, Fences isn't great. So, you know, you make your own decision there. But that and Locke was the only ones I can think of. But I'm sure there are others that we're just blanking on. But I doubt any of them top of this, because like I said, one of the greatest movies of all time. But yeah, that is our review of 12 Angry Men. Let's do some bonus reviews before we get out of here, Perk. I'll go first, then I'll pop over to you. You got some premier content to talk about this week. I got some not as premier. First thing, did a little rewatch of Get Smart. All right.
Oh, nice.
With Steve Carell, Anne Hathaway, Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I tell you what, Perk, I fucking love this movie. Is it perfect? No. But, like, it's just hilarious. Like, Steve Carell is so fucking funny. It's so, like, I don't know, like, honest and also, like, pretty logical. Like, they added, like, extra details just to make things make a little bit more sense. But, yeah, it's just so fucking funny. I love him and Anna Hathaway's chemistry. Alan Arkin is the chief is hilarious. Like, there's great slapstick. There's great just, like, lines and jokes. Like, I think it's got a pretty weak, you know, villain, and like the ending third act kind of takes too long to wrap up. Like the action scene kind of takes forever. But overall, this is just a great comedy. Like, I feel like I've not seen a comedy this funny, consistently funny in a while. I think we're kind of in a little bit of a drought for comedies. But Get Smart, a classic. Watch it if you haven't, for sure.
I haven't. So
you've never seen Get Smart?
No.
Oh, man. I know what you're doing this weekend.
Yeah,
it's a great time.
I know. I've heard just great things. And yeah, we're a little devoid for goofy, fun, relatively high budget comedies.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Like one line that I quote every once in a while is Steve Carell's on a plane, and for reasons he gets arrested by the air marshal, and he has to get to the bathroom because they have to, that's their airlock to like parachute out of the plane. And he goes, "Hey, I got to squeeze the lemon." And there's like an old lady like, "Oh, my God." He's like, "That's what you heard me. Squeeze the lemon." And it's great. I love it.
Yep.
You should definitely watch it.
All right.
But what did you watch, Bert?
So I had Plane. And Plane is a good opportunity to movie.
Mm-hmm.
So on the flight out, I watched Anatomy of a Fall, which has been getting a little bit of awards buzz.
Yeah.
And basically the plot line is a woman, husband, and their child who's blind live together in like a rural area in France. And one day the husband falls from the third story and dies. Mm-hmm. And the only witness to this is the wife. And the son, who was out for a walk with his guide dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fingers begin to point at the only person who was around, the wife. And essentially it's a 2.5 hour just dragging that woman out, her whole life out in front of a courtroom. Mm-hmm. And it is beyond painful to watch. It's really well done. It's well directed. It drags a little bit in the middle, so the pacing's not perfect. But the acting is the highlight for me. I think Sandra Hüller, who plays the main character, she is my best actress.
By a Over pretty Emma Stone.
By a pretty comfortable margin too.
Wow.
I know. Like, I'm not going to be mad if Emma Stone wins, because I love Emma Stone and I think she was tremendous in Poor Things. But, like, this is a tour de force. She just has to, the whole time, it's just her and being broken down and just minutia and little facial movements and cracks in her voice. And she's just perfect to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I'd pick her over Emma Stone and others, which I'll talk about later. But... that also there's a child actor who plays the blind son. He's great. He has a little bit of a monologue that he delivers tremendously. He's very believable as the child who is kind of in a position where he doesn't know what to believe. And he's hearing different things from different people, hearing stuff on the TV, hearing stuff from the prosecution. And he's kind of torn inside on what to do. And he portrays that beautifully. And I just like as a little shout out too, there ends up being a recorded fight, like a argument between the husband and wife. Jesus Christ. I wish I could argue that eloquently. Like it's hard to listen to for a number of reasons, but she's just very tactful with her words. And I was impressed, but yeah, it's not a movie that I enjoyed watching, but it's worth it for the performance. And yeah. I just hope that Sandra Hüller gets some credit from the Academy, hopefully. Yeah,
for sure. One thing I've heard about that movie is that you mentioned the acting. I heard the acting by the dog is outstanding. Can you confirm yeah.
I? The dog is good. He's a good dog.
Is he going to get nominated or?
I don't think they do that. I was hoping the donkey would get nominated for EO, but he did mm-hmm. not.
So. They don't do best boy, best good boy.
No best good boy, but, I will say kind of on the topic, like no one's actively like searching out this movie to watch it, but there's like a light animal abuse angle. Mm. So if that's not your thing, just don't like yeah. you weren't going to watch it anyway. So don't watch it.
Yeah, good shot for that. All right, Perk, should I talk about something cute or something mid?
Well, do the mid now so we can finish on a high note.
Sounds good. I watched Marvel's Echo. This is their latest show.
Out in its entirety?
Yeah, they released all of it at once. First time they've done that. New Marvel show. It is kind of a sequel to the Hawkeye show, a character that was introduced in that named Echo. It's a follow up on her story. There are good things in the show. There are bad things in the show. And I try not to be influenced by reviews, but I saw some reviews before I watched it. And I think that kind of influenced me by, you know, one of the reviewers I saw said the thing that's the worst thing about the show is the editing. Like, this is a very poorly edited show. And so I was watching for that. And I completely agree. So to break down kind of what the general plot is, I think what the issue doesn't have much of a plot is. So this character, Maya, she is a Native American heritage. She's deaf and also paraplegic. One of her bottom of her legs is a prosthetic. And the actress who plays her actually is deaf and has a prosthetic leg, which is kind of cool. Her mom dies when she's a kid, and because of that, she has to go to New York with her dad. Her dad works for Kingpin. So Vincent D'Onofrio's back from the Daredevil show as Kingpin, and he's great. I absolutely loved him in Daredevil, and it's cool to see him back. So he kind of raises her to be like kind of an assassin. Things happen. She tries to kill him, and then kind of goes back to her roots in Oklahoma with her family. And, you know, so it's kind of about her reconnecting with her family and also dealing with Kingpin, that kind of stuff. And there's just not a lot of plot. Like, I think the family interactions are really good and interesting. Like, it's interesting to learn more about Native American culture, and it's cool to see, you know, a ton of sign language. Like, I haven't watched Coda yet, which I know is a big kind of moment for representation there. I think it's another really great piece of representation. Just cool seeing all these actors, you know, signing well and everything and having like arguments and all that stuff. I think like the dynamics between people are genuinely good. But at the end of the day, it's like, why are we doing this? Why is this scene inserted here? Who is this character? Why do they matter? Like, I was confused a lot. I was bored a lot. Like, I just didn't care about things because I don't think they're laid out well. I feel like a lot of stuff was left on the cutting room floor. One of the characters that's most important to like the plot, she gets like five lines and is a damsel in distress most of the time when she's supposed to be kind of like a big emotional payoff. Like, I know I'm talking in circle or talking just like vaguely because I don't want to go into spoilers, but like, I don't know. It's fine. The action is pretty good. Like, I think there's some really solid action scenes. This is an M-rated show. So they do a little bit more in the violence, but also like not enough. I don't think like sometimes the violencer is doing it just to do it. Like, it doesn't really have a purpose. And I think there's some really bad CG. Like, Marvel's been getting kind of roasted for that lately. And I think there's a scene where she's on top of a train doing stuff, and this, the backgrounds are all CG, and just a lot of it's CG, and it just looks bad. There's a hummingbird that's important, that's a CG bird that just doesn't look great. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I was not happy about that stuff. You can kind of just tell she was on a green screen for some of the stuff. I don't know, man. Like, it's fine. I want it to be better. I think it has good stuff in it, but just the way it was edited, I think it just lost a lot of heart and just momentum. I think like it didn't have a lot of forward momentum to it. Bit unfortunate. We'll see if they can, I don't know, do more with this character, or improve their quality of shows. But Marvel's in kind of a weird spot right now, so.
I wish they would like pull back. Bottleneck the content a little bit, then you can have so much more time and people to devote to making them really good.
Like I think they are going to pull back this year. Like Deadpool 3 is the only movie coming out this year for Marvel. And for shows, they're bringing back pilots, which they took away for a while. And like showrunners, like they didn't have pilots or showrunners for a hot second because they were just trying to churn this shit out.
Yeah.
And hopefully with the writers and actor strikes, that will help, you know, with the new guidelines and everything. So I think we're in the process of getting there. But this show, I think, was just I think they shot a lot of stuff that was there was good stuff in there. But the way they cut it up, it just didn't really work fully. So, yeah, I can't really recommend it unless you're, you know, Marvel person like me, just want to stay up to date and everything. But yeah, that's Echo. Back to you, Perk.
Yeah, so as I mentioned, I had plane time. As a matter of fact, my flight home on Monday was 3.5 hours long. And what else is 3.5 hours of a long? Well, Killers of the Flower Moon. So I finally got to watch this. I've been meaning to forever. I meant to go see it at the theater, but it's like, when do I have just 4 hours to draw?
Yeah.
Infrequently. It's really good. It tells the story of the Osage Native Americans in Oklahoma who on their land find oil, and it leads to a, you know, very wealthy culture. And basically it follows Leonardo DiCaprio. He's the main character as Ernest, and his uncle, Robert De Niro, as they essentially try to like concoct strategies to marry into a family and then kill off everyone who has rights to the land, essentially. Yeah. to get the money, get the oil, get the land. And it is a thrilling story. It's like just add it to another long list of things that they just don't teach us in schools because mm-hmm. it'd be, I guess, too embarrassing. I don't know, but it's a wildly interesting story. And I'm glad that it's being told. Robert De Niro is great. Leonardo DiCaprio is amazing. I think he's probably not going to get a nod for this just because it's like almost – it's the problem of he's always this good, so people just don't really notice it anymore.
Yeah.
But he's fantastic. He's really good. He's so torn, and he portrays that really well, how torn he is, because he really loves this woman, but like at the same time is like tearing her family apart.
Yeah.
And then everyone stand out for this, and I think current probably front runner for best female actor is Lily Gladstone, who plays Molly. Ernest's wife and one of the sisters. She's really tremendous. She's, you know, of native heritage, so it's good representation, and she kills the role. Like my only gripe is that I wish she had more to do. There's a lot of the movie where she's kind of in the back seat. But when she is in control, she has just such a strong presence and is so clever and smart and just really strong. And I loved her portrayal. I loved her performance. All the acting is great. The directing is great because it's Scorsese and he's good at that.
Yeah.
it feels long, but it doesn't drag. So like the examples of this I've come to this year, Killers of the Flower Moon feels really long, but doesn't drag. Oppenheimer doesn't feel long and doesn't drag, even though it's 3 hours. Anatomy of a Fall feels really long and you know it, and it drags, but, surprisingly, for a 3.5 hour movie, I felt the same way about The Irishman. Like, it's long, but it doesn't bore you at any point. And then there's a segment I just kind of want to touch on, kind of the what traditionally would be like cut to a black screen and then some text with the where are they now. Scorsese does something really, really interesting with that. And I wasn't sure at first, but I really liked the way that he went with that at the end. I think it's just a super important story. So for that alone, it's worth seeing, but on top of that, it's just a really flawless movie.
Nice. Well, yeah, I'm glad you were able to watch it, and I'm glad you liked it. I am still not planning to watch it, so thank you for your service.
Yep, I gotcha.
But my parents went to go see it and they walked out after 2 hours because it was too sad.
it's pretty tough. It's never that, like, I don't know. It was never as hard to watch as Anatomy of a Fall. So maybe my lens is a little skewed. But yeah, it's definitely a tough story.
Yeah. But like I said, I think it's an important one to be told. Let's end on a happy note. The last thing I watched, Perk, was Pokemon Concierge. Are you familiar with this project?
No, I am not.
Do a quick little trailer search on your computer while I talk about it, because it's a stop motion Pokemon show.
Ooh.
So this was a Netflix Pokemon company collaboration. Stop motion animated Pokemon show, super short. 4 episodes are all like 10 minutes each. And it's just incredibly wholesome and cute. The premise is there's a island with a Pokemon resort on it. And we follow a woman named Haru, who kind of down on her luck and trying to make a change in her life. So she goes to work as a concierge at the Pokemon resort and just, you know, help Pokemon have a nice little spa day or go on a little adventure. And it's just adorable, man. Like, it's got great vibes. It's got a great message of just like every episode's kind of like a different little theme of believing in yourself or, you know, things like that. And the little, like, how the Pokemon are modeled is just, they're just adorable. And this is a great idea for a show. It's just a great comfort food. So if you're a Pokemon fan, if you like cute stuff, wholesome stuff, if you're into like, I don't know, like Stardew Valley or games like that, this is just a great feel good show that will not take you, you know, more than an hour to watch. So check out Pokemon Concierge. It's great.
I definitely will. This looks awesome.
Yeah. I was watching it in the morning after I woke up, and that was a great little wake up show to get me started for the day. So, Pokemon Company, do more stuff like this, please. it's good. That is our show for this week. Thank you everyone for watching and or listening. Next week, as I hinted at, we're going to be following Lee J. Cobb to On the Waterfront, Marlon Brando picture, which I've never seen Marlon Brando. So I'm very excited to see that, because apparently he's the greatest actor to ever live.
I'm sure you have.
Have I? What would I have seen?
Have the original Superman.
No.
You haven't seen the original Superman?
If I did, it was when I was a kid. I don't remember anything about it.
Aren't you the biggest superhero bozo I know?
I mean, I don't know. I didn't become a superhero bozo until later in life.
Fair enough. It's a very old movie. Yeah. I've seen all 4 of them, by the way.
I know he's in like Apocalypse Now, but I haven't seen that. I don't think I've seen a Brando picture, so I'm all excited for it.
A good intro, I'm hoping.
Yeah, me too. So that'll be On the Waterfront, and that is only able to rent. But, you know, $4 probably worth it for this one, I would guess. On the Waterfront to rent next week. And until then, thanks for watching. Bye.
Bye-bye.